If you'll email those questions, then I will come back to the desk after 45 minutes and shoot those questions at John Guandolo. All right, John, we're glad you're with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's all yours. I'll start your clock.
All right. Thank you. Well, welcome, everybody, and thanks for being here. What I'm going to do this evening is I'm going to lay out for you some nuggets and some big chunks to help you understand the threat as it actually exists, both conceptually and practically at the ground level. Then I'm going to, Chris is going to come along and talk about what is it that the Islamic movement seeks to do. And so this evening and tomorrow, he will share some of that. And then what I will do in our fourth segment tomorrow is we will close up talking about the actual network that is operating here and then what we can do about it. So so let's get started. Now, what I'd like to do is just spend a couple minutes to help you understand how did I get here? How did I get from being a Marine officer, an infantry officer, a combat veteran, to be talking about the Muslim Brotherhood threat, the totality of the threat, how it relates with groups like the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, and others, the nation states like Saudi Arabia, Iran, Pakistan, etc., how it all works together, and how the Islamic movement works with the Marxist movement here in the United States. And I just want to give you a quick little story. After 9/11, I was moved over to a counterterrorism unit at the Washington Field Office of the FBI. And pretty quickly, we had several significant investigations. And one of them opened up this world of the Muslim Brotherhood network here in the United States. And over the next few years, it became increasingly difficult to work with other offices because there was not an understanding of who the Muslim Brotherhood is, what they were doing in the United States, and how they were working with Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other terrorist groups like that. And so I put together some short one-day training programs, and then eventually in the summer of 2006, put together a two-week program, which was the first of its kind in the government, on the Muslim Brotherhood, the jihadi network, Sharia, which is what they say is their doctrine and what they seek to impose on the world, how it relates with other groups, as I mentioned, like at the time, Al-Qaeda was the primary one. And then how, when you know this information, does that affect FBI agents, state police, local police, security officials in other parts of the government, federal, state, et cetera? And that was the purpose. Well, in 2008, I was recruited out of the FBI to work with the Department of Defense doing strategic analysis of the threat. And as a part of what I did, I briefed many members of Congress, many 3- and 4-star generals, chairmen of congressional committees like Judiciary Committee, Intelligence Committee, Homeland Security Committee, briefed former FBI, CIA, DIA directors, national security advisors to the president. And none of those people that I briefed during that time understood what we're going to discuss here this evening and tomorrow. None of them. Now, the question is, now, how is that possible? What I want to do in this first segment is give you the beginning of an understanding of how that is possible. This war, this global war, the global Islamic movement, the global jihad that is being waged against the West and specifically the United States, their primary strategy is not to win on the battlefield. As Americans, we're used to fighting and winning wars on the battlefield. But you should ask yourself a question: how is it possible that the US military crushed the enemy in Afghanistan, crushed the enemy in Iraq, and yet we lost those wars? Think about that. How is that possible? Think about this. In 2005, the United States Department of State wrote constitutions for Iraq and Afghanistan, creating Islamic states, Islamic republics, under Sharia, Islamic law, which was the objective of Al-Qaeda. So we gave them exactly what they were fighting for in 2005, and yet they kept us fighting even until today. That's how the enemy seeks to win this war. It's a very different kind of war. For them, jihad is total warfare. We will talk more about it tomorrow. But it is not simply military combat. We have to ask ourselves, how is it possible that we have all these events, people being beheaded, events in San Bernardino, Orlando, Fort Hood, Little Rock, Arkansas, Seattle, all over the country from 9/11 till today, even up till this week in New York. All of these things that we are witnessing. You can see on your screen here, these are jihadis, Muslims waging jihad in France. This is the Charlie Hebdo attack, the Boston Marathon bombing, the attack in San Bernardino, all Muslims killing American citizens in these attacks in the U.S., the Orlando attack at a nightclub. Why are they doing this? Why do they say they're doing what they're doing? We've got overseas attacks where in this incident, a truck was used just like in New York. But vehicular jihad is not new in the global movement, nor is it new to the United States. After 9/11, there was an attack in Fremont, California, and in neighboring areas where one person was killed, 14 people were run over by a Pakistani Muslim. Witnesses said he was screaming Allahu Akbar. And of course, the media and his family said he's just crazy. There's the University of North Carolina student about 10 years ago who plowed through students in a place called The Pit at the Chapel Hill campus. And he said he did it for the sake of Islam and because of Muslims that were fighting overseas and the Americans that were attacking them. So all of these individuals and the organizations like Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, Hamas, Hezbollah, Boko Haram, Abu Sayyaf, Al-Shabaab, and all the Muslims that have been killed or captured in Europe or the United States, and the ones killed and captured on the battlefields across the world, say Muslims waging jihad in the cause of Allah to establish an Islamic state, a caliphate, under Sharia, Islamic law. That's what they say. Now, if you look on your screen here, we have the logo of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the logo of the Muslim Brotherhood, and the flag of, really it's the jihadi flag, which represents, for the purposes of this, violent jihadi organizations. So let me just, in literally 2 minutes, break this down for you. So first, who is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation? It is the entire Muslim world, every nation state, 56 nations plus the Palestinian territories. So 57 states under the banner of the OIC. They constitute the largest voting bloc inside the United Nations, and it is the largest international organization, second only to the United Nations. And at the head of state and king level, they meet every 3 years to make major decisions about the Muslim world and the progress of Islam in the world, the jihad. And in 1990, they met and they approved the Cairo Declaration on Human Rights in Islam. Now, I just want to read to you a couple little pieces of it, but we'll start here in Article 2. Life is a God-given gift, and the right to life is guaranteed to every human being. It is the duty of individuals, societies, and states to protect this right from any violation, and it is prohibited to take away life except for a Sharia-prescribed reason. The preservation of human life throughout the term of time willed by God is the duty prescribed by Sharia, and it's prohibited to breach it without a Sharia-prescribed reason. If you go down to Article 19 here under Section D, there shall be no crime or punishment except as to provided for by Sharia. And if we go to the very last articles in the Cairo Declaration on Human Rights, which was the Muslim world's response to the International Declaration of Human Rights, they say all rights and freedoms stipulated in this declaration are subject to Islamic Sharia. And finally, the Islamic Sharia is the only source of reference for the explanation or clarification of any articles in this declaration. Let me clarify for you, because this, the Cairo Declaration on Human Rights and Islam, was submitted to the United Nations as an official document on behalf of the entire Muslim world at the head of state and king level, which means the entire Muslim world is on official record saying, when we Muslim leaders or the Muslim world uses the phrase human rights, we mean the imposition of Sharia. And I'm going to say it now, and Chris will unpack this evening and tomorrow, but 100% of all Sharia Islamic law mandates jihad, warfare against non-Muslims, until the entire world is under Islamic rule.